Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Brandon, and we continue our talk about technology. The topic this month is data breaches. It's May 12th, 2018, and I have two panelists back with me. Welcome, Zach.
Hey, good to be here.
Zach, what did we talk about yesterday?
Well, yesterday we talked about data breaches, and we heard from a professional, someone who spent over 35 years fighting cybercrime and these kinds of identity theft issues, Neil O'Farrell. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of learned about that it's so important to wake up, be responsible, and make sure you're protected.
Yes, and welcome back, Pauline. What is something else that we dug into yesterday?
Sure. Well, I really enjoyed our conversation. I thought it was really interesting. It's really about reframing your thinking when you think about your security with your information online. Basically, the big wake-up call that Neil O'Farrell gives us is he says that some of our information is probably in the hands of identity thieves already.
Wow.
So while, of course, you know, having strong passwords and doing all these things we do to try and prevent our information from being taken is still important, there's this other side of it, which is realizing that some of our information has already been stolen. And then what? What do you do to protect yourself from having that information be used against you to be exploited?
And that's a scary thing. And we've all heard stories, and maybe some of us know family members who have been affected, maybe not by something exactly like this, but by some sort of scam. I remember a year or so ago when I was back in the U.S., my parents got a call saying that they owed money to the IRS. And of course it was a scam. And I think they even threatened to call the police or something like that. But, went online and even on the IRS website, they had information about this scam. So it was a well-known scam, but some people, they don't know about it. And I think oftentimes, Zach, older people can fall prey to something like that.
Right. You know, as technology advances, it seems like they could be the vulnerable target for hackers and just for dishonest people who are after people's money, information, or identity. I even think that it could be another vulnerable group could be young people, people who are new to having a bank account or some kind of sensitive information. And, you know, often we think of, oh, robbers or thieves or robbers are just those people that are breaking into your house. But there are also a lot of people that are looking out who's vulnerable in terms of technology and information.
So there's many different ways that people can, you know, kind of fall prey to a scam. Or in this case, it's a bit different. People, your information is being stolen, but at any rate, people's money can be taken one way or the other. So we need to be careful and be vigilant and pay attention to what's going on as best as possible.
One person I know, had actually received a phone call, and they had simply said, you know, we need some private information, and then we can help you make this transaction go through. And he thought, oh, okay. Well, if you know, and I want my package, so here's my information. And it turned out to be a hacker. They had hacked the purchase order and got the sensitive information. And so I think it's really important to pay attention to articles like this or different resources, professional voices, and to take those precautions.
I think that's a really great example. So the hacker was able to get one little piece of information, right? He knows a package is supposed to be delivered to this guy. But then he takes that little bit of information and then goes further and further with it so he can collect more and more information to the point where he's finally able to get the money out of this guy's account. And in some ways, that's what we're talking about today, is that ultimately, with the amount of breaches that have happened, some little pieces of our information are probably already in the wrong hands.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that can be done in between that little piece of information and a moment where they actually take money out of our account. There's lots of different ways to protect along the way.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to be talking about today.
That's right. So if you have your magazine, please open it up to page 23 and we'll have our first reading for today.
Layers of protection. A thief who has your username and password to an online financial, email, or social media account won't be able to log in if you set up multi-factor authentication. Here's how it works. When you sign in, you are sent a one-time code via text message or phone call that you must enter to complete the login. Think of it as a second password, one that changes so it's harder to hack. It also can't mistakenly be disclosed by you because you don't know the code in advance.
So yesterday at the end of day one, we were talking about some tired old advice and how, of course, we need to create strong passwords. Of course, we need to check monthly accounts and so forth for unauthorized activity, but we can do even more. Today, we're going to talk about that even more as we get into layers of protection. And how do we start off today, Pauline?
Well, I love this. He kind of starts with a hypothetical. What if a thief ends up with your account number and your password? If in this hypothetical situation, I immediately think, well, then for sure that thief can get into my bank account and steal my money. They have the two things they need. There's no way I can do anything about it then. But he says, actually, that person will not be able to log in if you set up multi-factor authentication.
All right, multi-factor, referring to there are many parts involved. So we're talking about multi-factor authentication, and what is authentication?
Well, to authenticate is to check to see that it's valid, that person really is who they are. And so, yeah, we're talking about multi-factor, and I just think of that's adding another layer. We're talking about layers of protection.
Right, and it's important to have more layers, so hopefully that will help keep you safe. And so ultimately, the thief will not get what they're really going after.
Right, so a single layer would just be your password, but we're starting to learn maybe that's not enough. So here's how it works, they say, the multi-level, is when you sign in, you are sent a one-time code via text message, phone, or phone call. So you give your ID, you give your password, but then before it lets you actually into the site, it sends you another authentication check, right,
yeah,
to your phone, most likely, for you to say, yes, this really is me,
right,
and I really do want into this account.
An important part of this, I think, is it's a one-time code, and so they send that to you and you use it then, but it's not something that you continue to use, so that hopefully that will help keep you safe, or help keep thieves away.
Right, and since, you know, even if that hacker has all your information, if they haven't physically stolen your phone,
right,
they still don't then have everything they need,
yes,
to get in, because your phone gets that, you know, random password one time you put it in. And then hopefully as soon as you go in, you might also see if there's been, you know, some attempted logins that you know you hadn't done. And then you can start to immediately, you know, do all those other steps to prevent,
right,
further issues.
And I've used this before with the app Line. They will send you a code sometimes. I think if you're trying to log in somewhere else or something like that, it will send a code to your phone. You have to enter that. And so that adds that extra layer of protection.
And I think that it's quite common now for most social media platforms to use some kind of multi-factor authentication. I think of, like, if I'm changing my password to Facebook or Twitter or something like that, it then will say, you know, we just want to make sure this is you, and then we'll send that one-time code.
Right.
I know sometimes that happens with me if I'm using a different computer or at a different spot with my computer. When I would go to log into my bank account, all of a sudden I'll say, oh, we need to verify it's you because you're coming from a different place or using a different computer than we know you normally do in order to do this. So then either they'll send me a message, you know, on my phone with a special code, or they'll ask me some extra questions that I've set up to verify that it's me. So I do think a lot of companies are doing things to try and help, but we also need to take responsibility for that too.
And that happened to me recently. Someone tried to log into my iPhone account or something, And I got a message on my phone that said someone's trying to access your account somewhere, and I could either allow that or decline. And so, of course, I declined, and then I changed my password. And so it was nice that that popped up. It had never happened before, and it was strange. But at least I'm glad that they took those measures to notify me.
So layers of protection in action.
Yes, that's right. And I think that's super helpful. Well, think of it as a second password, one that changes so it's harder to hack, because they're sending you that one-time code, and so it changes. It also can't mistakenly be disclosed by you, because you don't actually know what the code is in advance. And so it sounds like a good plan so far, until thieves get creative and maybe find another way to get in, I guess.
Yeah, but I do think this is a lot more foolproof. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's something that is working, and maybe more companies will implement this. Well, let's find out more about these layers of protection in our next reading.
If you haven't set up multi-factor authentication, a thief who has your login credentials could sign in as you and try to add their phone number to your account, then set up authentication using that number. If successful, they could control your account and lock you out. But you can protect against that too. Financial, email, and social media accounts allow you to set up email or text notifications every time a change is made to your settings. If a crook changes the phone number on your account, you would be notified and could report the fraud. You can't stop a thief from using stolen credit card or bank account information, but those accounts allow you to set up email and text notifications for every purchase. If a fraudulent charge occurred, you would know immediately and could report it.
All right, well, it's time to set up multi-factor authentication, because a thief who has your login credentials, well, they could go ahead and take all your information, of course, and then if you don't have this multi-factor authentication, they have what they need and they can get in. Right.
And not only that, then they can set up the,
yes,
these, you know, like text messages to their phone.
Yes.
You could be completely permanently locked out of your own account if somebody else gets in first and sets that up. So again, it's a big warning, kind of a wake up call to say, oh, I better be the first one to set those things up in my accounts, because God forbid somebody else would, you know, not only get into my account and steal my money, but then take full control of it. So, you know, we were saying hopefully more and more companies will continue to set up these multi-factor authentication systems. But a lot of times you have to opt into it. You mm-hmm. have to choose to use mm-hmm. it. So it's a double. You can't just say, well, hopefully the companies will protect us.
Right.
Many of the companies already have this option, but you have to choose it.
And we're talking about taking responsibility for your own credentials. Credentials being the information that proves you are you.
That's right.
Even whether we're talking about a technology, login, password, mm-hmm. credentials, or even life credentials could be, you know, if you were to be pulled over by the police officer, he might say, hey, I want to see some credentials.
Like your ID. Mm-hmm.
Your ID,
driver's license. Something like that. Mm-hmm. All right, so they could sign in and they could try to add their phone number to your account, and then it's over, right? And because they can then set up that authentication using that number, as Pauline was just talking about. And if they're successful, they could then control your account and lock you out. But you can protect against that too. And then next we get into financial, email, and social media accounts. What do they allow you to do, Pauline?
So same idea. They allow you to set up email or text notifications every time a change is made to your settings. So if somehow someone does get into your account, if somehow, you know, even in all your attempts, somebody does make it in, You can still have it set up so that if somebody gets in and starts to try and change settings, tries to send messages to their own phone, you immediately get an email or a text message or something saying, hey, somebody's trying to change your settings. And then hopefully you can call the bank or you can make those, you know, contacts you need right away to stop that from occurring.
Yeah, and your bank will also email you if you set it up that way if you spend over a certain amount. So if you do it yourself, it will send it, but it will still alert you. Maybe someone else stole your card or someone stole your card and spent a lot of money. It will alert you.
Yeah, I can recall once my wife has a limit on her card, and the bank notified us immediately as it's saying, hey, you're trying to take out more money than you've been authorized. And, you know, we got that notification and we realized, oh, okay, this wasn't us. Good. So we prevented that. And
yes.
So, yeah, it's a great service.
I like this next sentence, just the beginning of it. It says, if a crook changes the phone number on your account, then you would be notified and could report the fraud. We talked about that, but just this word crook, it's just another word for like bad guy or somebody who commits crimes, right? It's not specific to a thief or an internet crime. It's just a general word. Mm-hmm. We've also thrown the word hacker around a lot. That is more specific, right? That is very specific. Criminals who are on the internet breaking into what are supposed to be secured areas and taking information. That would be a hacker, or maybe getting in and putting a virus in, but it's getting through security into places they're not supposed to be on the internet.
Very good. And if you're notified about something, you are told about it in maybe an official manner. Of course, you receive an official email from your bank or some other site telling you that something has occurred. Well, you can't stop a thief from using stolen credit card or bank account information. But what can you do?
You can, however, set up accounts that allow you to set up email and text notifications for every purchase.
Mm-hmm.
So you have more responsibility, more knowledge of what's happening within your accounts.
And this would help you to know if someone uses your information, your credit card number to buy something, you would know immediately, right, Pauline?
Yeah, this part is a little difficult for me. Actually, I think now that I live in Asia and honestly, I use my credit card much less frequently, I could really see this being something I would appreciate having.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to imagine doing that in the States because in the States, I use my credit card maybe 5 times a day. So the idea of getting constant messages is hard for me to like, I know it's a small annoyance in comparison to such a big threat, but I wonder if I would even
pay attention.
Pay attention. I have so many credit card, you know, transactions going. So I'd have to think about that. I don't know if there's a way to have it flagged, like if it's more than this amount.
You can. Yes, that's what mine does. If it's over like a certain amount, I think you set the amount, then it will email you.
Right, because I know most of my transactions when I'm in the States are under $20, you know, and I don't mind if they send me a message to remind me I spent $50 on something.
Right.
But if it's every $5 charge, that would drive me crazy.
Yeah, in the U.S., it's much more of a card country. People don't use cash as much. So I use a debit card a lot there. And in fact, some people, you know, will use a debit card for like $2 because they just don't carry much cash with them. And that can seem a little bit much, but it's just kind of the way it is there for a lot of people. We also have a word here that ties in perfectly with this article because we're talking about fraud. And this word is fraudulent. What does that mean?
Well, it just means exactly what we're talking about, dishonest or illegal behavior to do something like a breach or hack or steal.
All right.
So it's fraudulent behavior.
If we have a fraudulent charge, that means someone stole your credit card, for example, and bought something. It is not something that you bought, and so they have stolen it, and it's fraudulent. Well, it is an inconvenience to set up these email notifications for every little charge. And some of these other actions that we take can be an inconvenience, but is it worth it? That's what we talk about in our last reading for today.
An inconvenience that pays off. we must accept that it's necessary to set up layered security and deal with the few extra seconds it takes to access our online accounts. I think we have to change consumer behavior and expectations, O'Farrell said. The financial world and others could help by automatically enrolling customers in multi-factor authentication and email text alerts instead of making us sign up. Think of it as a preventive measure that takes time but pays off. Protecting your identity should be a habit rather than an afterthought.
Well, this inconvenience hopefully will pay off, Zach.
Mm-hmm. To pay off is, it's successful. It's worth it. It's, you're going to get what you want out of it.
So it's necessary to set up layered security and deal with the time that it takes to access our online accounts.
So here's one question I have. This does make a really strong argument for multi-factor authentication. I will say after I read this article, I thought like, oh, maybe I should do that. I have not selected that as an option on many of my accounts because it seems like a pain.
Yeah.
But here's my other major question, and I don't know, we didn't get an answer from this, but at least it's making me think I should look into this, is what happens if I lose my phone? I lose my phone all the time, guys. I've lost my phone 6 times this year.
Wow.
Well, over the course of 12 months. It always came back to me. I'm really grateful.
Like a boomerang.
Yeah. But I also know the odds are not good that after 6 times, the next time it'll probably be gone.
You know, we had an article about tiles, those little things that you can attach, but you can't actually attach it to your phone because you need your phone to access the app. But if you remember, listeners, we had that article that maybe if you attach the tile to your wallet, then you open your app and you will find it. It will make a sound or something. But you need your phone, so you're
See,
out of
again,
luck.
See, again, that doesn't help me because I always lose my phone on its own. So I do want to know, okay, if I set up all these multifaceted authentication services and then I lose my phone, I'm not so much worried that somebody's going to be able to get into my phone and mm-hmm. and access that because I think my phone's security is
yeah.
pretty good, but I just want to know how then do I get into all those accounts.
Well, I imagine that, you know, with nowadays different devices are linked or synced up based on shared accounts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your email on your phone is set up to your email. You could go into a computer and, right? Like, you kind of have that connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll have to look into it some more. But that's the question that I'm at. But I really appreciate this article is pushing me to those next steps of saying, okay, let me think about this a little more seriously. Before,
right.
The reason I didn't do it was just because of the inconvenience. It just
yes.
seemed like something not worth my extra time and annoyance. But now I'm like, okay, it does sound like it's worth the time and the annoyance. Now I just need to double check that it's not going to secure me out of it. But
yeah,
I'm sure there's got to be answers to that. I just got to look into
fear,
it some
right?
more.
Yeah, well, we have to change the way we think. And O'Farrell says, I think we have to change our behavior and we have to change our expectations. Expectations are always huge. We need to have the right expectations. And we need to think about this in a different way.
Yeah, we talked about this at the beginning of yesterday, right? That there was this big Equifax breach and the very beginning of the whole article says, get over it, which is kind of like stop pointing fingers at the companies that aren't doing enough to, you know, protect your information. You need to change your perspective, change your expectation of these companies and start taking responsibility to do everything you can on
yeah.
your end to make sure that any information they lose in some kind of boneheaded way or just by some hackers being really intelligent, that you've still set up other barriers
right.
so that your information can't easily be used against you.
So we can take action, but also financial institutions can take action. What do we learn there in line 19?
Right. Well, they can actually enroll customers in this multi-factor authentication, you know, through emails and text alerts, instead of the customer actually signing up for it.
Right. So right now, usually maybe you'll sign up for it, but they could make this a standard way of protecting your information. Well, think of it as a preventative measure that takes time but pays off. That's a good phrase to know, preventative measure. If you're taking a preventative measure, what are you actually doing?
Well, you're doing something to stop a bad thing from happening in the future.
That's right. So protecting your identity should be a habit rather than an afterthought. And I have to admit, a lot of times it's an afterthought for me. If it's an afterthought, it's like, you know, after it already happens, then you think, oh, I wish I would have done this or that. But we need to have these preventative measures. We need to be proactive, think ahead, and do something about it. Well, there are some other ways that you can protect your credit. We have a sidebar there at the top of page 23. Pauline, would you just read that for us?
Sure. It says, there are ways to stop thieves from opening new credit accounts in your name. The primary tool is a credit freeze. A freeze should stop new accounts because a creditor would not be able to access your payment history to determine if you are a lending risk. You must freeze your file with each credit bureau individually, though. So freezes can be a problem if you intend to apply for a loan or a credit card because you must temporarily lift or thaw the freeze so the lenders can access your file. A credit lock works like a freeze by blocking access to your files. Equifax intends to unveil a free lifetime lock.
Okay, thank you. Well, so this tells you something that you can do. You can have this credit freeze. And hopefully it will stop the thieves from opening new credit accounts in your name. So a freeze, of course, is kind of you put a stop to something.
Right. And there are, you know, a couple different ways that hackers, crooks, thieves, cyber criminals can exploit your information. The biggest way is that they'll take the accounts you already have and try to get access to them, right? So a lot of what we talked about today was how to prevent that from happening. But then there's this second, not quite as frequent, but still a potential problem of them opening a whole new account in your name, and that's what this would prevent.
Right, yes. Actually, in my research, I found out, according to Business Insider, that a credit freeze actually, it does protect against new accounts being opened in your name, but that doesn't happen very often. That only happens 4% of the time. Actually, what's more of a problem is your current account is at risk.
Right.
Of course, the thing is, though, we do know, you know, there's all this information out there that thieves maybe haven't even fully begun to cull through, to look through. So maybe this, you know, creating new accounts will become more and more of an issue as people with ill intentions, has access to so much information. And especially if more and more people are better about preventing their current accounts, maybe they will shift to this. So it's never a bad idea to be on top of it and just
prevent
what could
be. Right. Very good point. Well, we are all out of time today. Thank you for joining us this month for our technology article. We hope you will join us next time here on Advanced Studio Classroom. Until then, this is Brandon.
I'm Pauline.
And Zach.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.